Recently, I've been reading a book entitled The Gift of Life, and it's by Henry Landworth. I told you a little bit about Henry last week. This is his autobiography. I told you how he is the brainchild behind the program Give Kids the World. It's a program where there's a village that has been built in Kissimmee, Florida, and where children who have a terminal illness can come for free with their whole family to live in this village for like 5 days and be able to go to Disney World and all the surrounding attractions and be able to make memories that are going to last a lifetime for all of the family. It's a very powerful thing. They celebrated their 30th anniversary this last year. They have now helped more than 150,000 families be able to come and have this very special experience. Henry's now 90 years old, and he still is so passionate about all these kinds of ministries he's been involved in. And the reason is because that he looks at the lives of these children who know they can't control their future, and he's been there. He tells his story of how he had been born in Belgium, but got raised actually in Poland. He was 13 years old when the Nazis came to power and his family was swept up and put into Auschwitz. They were Jewish. It was there in this prisoner of war, this concentration camp, that Henry's father and mother both died. In the end, miraculously, he and his sister, a twin sister, would survive. They lived there for 5 years. 5 years of this inhuman torture. He really thought he was going to starve to death. To truly know hunger, he thought he would starve to death. When it came to the end of the war, right when it got near the end, several of the soldiers were ordered to gather up a group of these boys and take them out into the woods. They knew they were going to be shot. But these German soldiers all got to talking, and when they got the boys out into the woods, they simply said, "Run." They shot into the air, and then they went back to the camp. Henry had lived. He decided he wanted to come to the United States. And so it was that he managed to get passage on a freighter that he worked on to come to the United States. All he had was the clothes on his back and a few dollars and his Torah. A Torah that had been buried when the Holocaust began. He was able to dig up. It was his prized possession. Those first 5 books of the Bible, he was able to take that all the way to the United States. He came with faith. He came with hope. But most of all, he was grateful to be alive. He came and he lived with family. So he had some family members who were diamond cutters. He began to get trained to do that, but he did not like that. And then one day he got a letter from the President of the United States that he thought must be a joke. But it wasn't from the President of the United States. It was from the draft board. He had been drafted. And so it was, he went into the Army. He served his country in the Army. And 2 years later he got out and he had the GI Bill. And so then he went to work and going to college in order to learn about being in the hotel service industry. And it's while he was going to school that he met this young lady, who was a beautiful young lady he fell in love with. It turned out that she was a good Irish Catholic. I would like to have been there at dinner when she brought home her new Polish Jewish boyfriend. But they must have been special parents because they wound up loving Henry as much as their daughter did. They got married, and they then headed down to Florida on their honeymoon. Never had been to Florida, but when they went down to Florida, they fell in love with the weather and decided just to stay. He became general manager of the Starlight Motel, the motel on Cocoa Beach where the astronauts would come and stay, right there where all the different reporters would come, and knowing Walter Cronkite and all these other people, it became a special time because, you see, Henry understood people. He had a passion for serving, a passion for loving. He sensed people's needs before they asked them. He just looked at people and money and things different because of all that he'd been through. He did so well, he was given the opportunity to take over a couple of Holiday Inns that were failing. He turned them around, made them successful. He was able to continue to buy into the chain. He suddenly had lots of Holiday Inns as Orlando was coming into being and growing and Disney World, and he became a multimillionaire. Now, you would think a person who had lived through the Holocaust, a person who had been so poor and thought they were going to starve to death, a person who now was rich would come to that point in life and go, I just want to enjoy it. But not Henry. Henry was so grateful. Grateful for life, grateful for coming to this country, grateful for his opportunities. He lived so out of gratitude that he wanted to give his life trying to bless other people. It was fascinating to read the book and to really see what he believed about life, and I wanted to read you what Henry had to say. A person is not defined by what they have, but by what they give. How much can one person possibly consume? How many steaks can you eat? How many bottles of wine can you drink? How many comfortable chairs can you sit in? How many trips can you take? After a while, you've done all these things, you get very depressed, frustrated deep in your heart because there's nothing else to do, nothing else to have. I believe giving to others helps make a person whole. It doesn't matter what type of help you're capable of giving. What matters is that you are willing to give. It doesn't matter what type of help you're capable of giving. What matters is that you're willing to give. Henry lived out of this incredible spirit of gratitude, and he has found, though, that the meaning and the joy of his life comes in his ability to give all those years, whether serving at the Starlight Motel or whether it's bringing Give Kids the World into being. I believe Henry has it right. It's when you and I choose to give that we become whole. Today, I'm going to close this first sermon series this year on the year of gratitude. But it really is the beginning of what we're going to do all year long. As we have gone through this first part of this year of gratitude, I've just wanted to take the time to remind us and to see if we would commit to renewing, to uplifting again our spiritual disciplines that we all know and sometimes do. We have committed that we're going to have a daily devotional every day. And that we will have a time of prayer. And that the prayer will begin with giving God thanks for three things. Whatever it is you feel you can give God thanks, you will spend time starting your prayer, giving God thanks, then going into your prayers of supplication, petition, oh God, please help me. And then end with a prayer of gratitude. We have seen that if life is good, and many times it is, it's easy to find those things for which to be grateful, but giving God thanks grounds you. It reminds you of what's important. But if life is difficult and you're finding yourself in a hard place, then giving thanks is even more important. It is even more important to remember how you have been blessed before you pray those prayers of, oh God, please help me, and then give thanks. It will change the way that you're looking at your life. So we've wanted to polish up, renew our spiritual discipline on that. We said we're going to write a thank you note a day. That is a spiritual discipline. It's one of the ways that we're going to be constantly reminding ourselves we have something to be grateful for. And when you express that gratitude, writing a note, it does something in your soul. We've talked about saying grace. Most of us were raised with the idea of saying grace, and it is so easy to get out of the habit. And we said, what would it be if three times a day we gave God thanks and remember how we have been blessed? So we said we're going to try to do this, and this is what's going to happen as we go through. And what we know is we will be different when you live in a spirit of gratitude. And I don't think there's any greater example of that than what we are reading about in our scripture lesson this morning. For we were reading about the founding of one of the happiest, best churches that Paul would start. The story was about how Paul was on his missionary journey and he went to Macedonia, which is modern-day Greece. It was his first time to be in Europe. He went to the town of Philippi. Philippi was a thriving town. We probably went to the synagogue first in order to be able to pray, and then he went down to the river, and we went there on the travels of Paul years ago, and I got to tell you, that place in Philippi is beautiful. It just feels holy. And I can see the women there, and Paul comes with his entourage, and he begins to talk to them about Christ, and Lydia's heart is moved. Now, Lydia was the seller of purple goods. That would be something that would be a very expensive thing. It is fascinating when you look at Lydia, what we see is, here is this businesswoman, and you never hear about a man in her life. There's not a man who gives permission to come home. There's not this person. Scholars have said either Lydia was a widow or she had always been single. But the fact that this single woman was such a successful businesswoman was so unusual in her day. Go, Lydia. She had done well. We also know that Lydia is the first convert to Christianity in Europe. And so when Lydia's heart is so moved, she is so grateful to Paul that he has brought this message, so grateful for the grace of Christ, she says, "Would you come to my house?" They stay with Lydia, and there's where they start the house church. That's the beginning of the church in Philippi, in the house with Lydia. The church grows and does well, and the spirit of the church in Philippi is just a different spirit. You can see that later on. For years later, what we see is Paul is in prison. We've looked at several of the prison letters this past series. Paul is in prison in Rome, and it is Philippi that decides to collect food and clothes and money and send a representative from the church to serve Paul while he is in prison. They're so grateful. Grateful for what Paul had done for them, grateful for God's gift, and so it is they are willing to be so generous with Paul. It is a different spirit. And Paul writes a letter to the Philippians, and in it he simply wants to remind them. He says in the second chapter, "Do nothing from selfishness or conceit. Remember, let each of you look not only to his own interest, but also to the interest of others." That's what the people of Philippi had been doing. And Paul said, "You keep on doing that. It's going to make such a difference in your life." I believe that as you and I go through this year of gratitude, living out of gratitude is going to make a difference in our lives. Several things I believe you're going to see happening in your life as we go through this year. As we bring this first series to a close, there's just those three things that I want to remind you of. One, I believe when you live out of a spirit of gratitude, you're just naturally going to want to share what you have. You're going to find yourself wanting to share what you have. Paul said, "Don't be selfish. Don't be selfish." You and I live in a culture right now that encourages us to consume. It encourages us to buy and to think about ourselves. And there's nothing wrong about thinking about yourself, but as Paul said, think not only about yourself, but also the needs of others. Our culture is not emphasizing that. It's emphasizing to consume and to think about me. If you live in gratitude, you will be seeing the opportunities to share what you have. I was reading an article on NPR recently. It was about Roman Totenberg. The name may sound familiar to you. You may recognize it because of Nina Totenberg. That's his daughter. She was a legal analyst on NPR. But she's talking about her dad, Roman Totenberg. 5 years ago now, he passed away at 101. But what an incredible life that he lived. It turned out that he was born in Poland, but the family moved to Moscow when he was just a baby. They were Jewish. They came to there, and it was a very difficult time. In the end, the mom was working, the dad was working. He was 5 years old. They had to do something with him. And not wanting to leave him alone in the apartment, they went upstairs and began talking to the man who lived above him. He was a concert maestro with the orchestra. And they said, "Look, you work at night. We have got to work during the day. We're all about to starve to death. We don't want to leave our child alone. Could we try to pay you something to help babysit our son?" And this man was more than happy to help and said, "Absolutely." And so little Roman began being left with this concert maestro. Now, if you're a concert maestro with the orchestra and you suddenly find yourself babysitting a five-year-old, I mean, what do you do? He did what anybody would do. He said, "Hey, kid, you want to learn how to play the violin?" What a grace moment. What a grace moment. Talk about God moving in your life. He was a child prodigy. He picked up the violin, and he knew how to play. He made amazing music. In fact, 5 years later, he was giving concerts with a concert maestro and just wowing the audiences. A couple years after that, he was on tour through the Europe, wowing audiences. He was invited to come and to perform before the King of Italy. And he was taught, you got to put on a top hat, you got to put on a long tail coat, you come before the king, and when you're through, you bow and you begin to back out. You never turn your back to the king. That's what he did. It was right after that that he got the opportunity and was invited to come and play in the White House. FDR and Eleanor, they invited a group of friends, and here came Roman Totenberg, and he played, and he just blew them away. But when they were through, he was invited to their private quarters, and it was Eleanor herself who served him lunch. And he thought, this is the kind of country that I want to live in. I like this attitude and ideas. He would ultimately immigrate to the United States. But that day, while he was there playing in the White House, one of the guests was Alice Longworth. She was the daughter of Theodore Roosevelt. Her husband, Nicholas, was an amateur violinist, and he had just died. And when she listened to this young boy, Roman, playing the violin, and she knew all that he had gone through, she said, "I'd like to give you my late husband's violin." It was a Stradivarius. And so it was he suddenly had this incredible violin. He had a very poor violin. What a gift. He would immigrate to the United States. He would give concerts throughout America, Europe, literally around the world. He would start teaching at Boston University. He would give concerts and he would teach till he was in his 90s. He loved life and he loved music. And it was in his 90s that he was being interviewed, and the interviewer said, "Can you show me the Stradivarius?" And he said, "Well, I don't have it." "You don't have the Stradivarius violin? You don't have it?" "Well, no." "What happened to it?" And Roman said, "Well, I was so grateful that I was able to come to the United States. I was so grateful that I got this incredible instrument. I was so grateful for all my success, I gave it back to Alice. And I asked her to give it to another young violinist and help somebody else on the way." When you feel grateful, it just seems so natural to want to share what you have. Look not only to your own interest, but look to the interest of others. Secondly, I believe when you live out of the spirit of gratitude, you're going to find yourself this year just wanting to go out of your way to be kind. You're going to go out of your way to be kind. It was the people in Philippi who thought, Paul is in prison. Well, let's get food and clothes and money and send a representative to be there to help care for Paul. He was stunned and he was so grateful. But it's because the people of Philippi were so grateful. It just seemed so natural to want to be kind. You know, I've been watching the new cabinet get interviewed and sworn in for our president. And as I've been watching it, I couldn't help but make me think about Colin Powell. You know, I've always was a great fan of Colin Powell. He was an amazing Secretary of State back under President George Bush. And as I started thinking about him, I remembered my favorite story of him. He has so many wonderful stories, but I remembered when he told about how as a young man, he was working in Washington, and he was very active in an Episcopal church right there in Virginia. It's a small church, but he was very active. He is a man of great faith, as I say, an Episcopalian. And so it was that he, at his church, was elected to be the layman, the lay leader of the church. And during the year he was lay leader, the bishop called and said, I have a priest that I want to appoint to your church as an associate pastor for a year. He needs somewhere to heal. Would that be okay? And Colin Powell said, yes, we will receive him. He said, the bishop didn't tell me why he needed to heal. I didn't ask. The priest came. Said he was a wonderful man. He loved on us. We loved on him. The people cared about him. They didn't know what problem he may have had, what grief he may have endured. They didn't ask. He didn't offer. A year went by. It seemed to go by so quickly. We had such a good time dreaming dreams and working and getting to know one another and loving him. And he said, but you know, when it came to his last Sunday, it was his turn to preach. And I'll never forget, I don't remember his scripture, and I don't remember his sermon, but I never forgot the last line of his sermon. It was more than 40 years ago, and it changed the way that I've lived life. He said the last line of his sermon was, remember, always show more kindness than seems necessary, because the person receiving it needs it more than you'll ever know. Always show more kindness than seems necessary. I predict this year, as you live in a spirit of gratitude, as you polish these spiritual disciplines, you will find yourself showing more kindness than seems necessary, because it'll just feel like the right thing to do. Look not only to your own interest, but also to the interest of others. For Philippi to send clothes and food and money and a person to serve Paul, that was probably more than was necessary. But it just seemed like the right thing to do. And so third, I believe when you live out of the spirit of gratitude this year, you're going to find yourself sharing what you have. You're going to find yourself being kinder than seems necessary. But what's also going to happen is you're going to start feeling an incredible sense of purpose and meaning in your life. For you will feel like you are a part of something bigger than yourself. You'll start to feel like you're leaving this world a better place. And everybody wants to feel like their life matters. It matters because I lived. It matters the world is a better place because I have been here. And when you live out of gratitude and begin to share and are kinder than is necessary, you're going to find that you're feeling a sense of meaning and purpose. Just as Henry would say, it doesn't matter what you give. The question is, will you give? Everybody has something to give. It's what makes you whole. I got to be honest with you. Recently, I faced a very difficult time of temptation in my life that needed a lot of prayer. I'd gone to the grocery store, and I was standing in front of the freezer department, and I was looking at the ice cream. Now, I'm looking at the ice cream, and I just got to tell you that I'm wanting to try to lose a few pounds and get into shape, and I found myself standing in front of that ice cream frozen department, looking at all these ice creams, and I started telling myself, I really want that ice cream. I need that ice cream. And I told myself that if I buy that ice cream, you can take it home. You can eat a small cup once a week. That doesn't hurt anything. Hello, my name is Bob. I'm an ice creamaholic. I can't do that. If I buy the ice cream and I bring it home, I intend to eat a small cup once a week. I'm going to eat it all the time. I just can't seem to have resistance. And so I'm standing there in front of this frozen department looking at the ice cream thinking, I want this. I need this. And then suddenly I saw an ice cream and I knew that if I bought that ice cream, I would bless other people's lives. I knew the story behind that ice cream, that if I bought it, I was looking not only to my own needs, but I was looking to the needs of others. I would be a blessing and help others if I bought it. I knew the story. The story was about a guy named Ben Cohen. Ben Cohen was 13 years old. Turned out that he was kind of pudgy and not really in shape. In junior high, you had to go to gym, and of course, then you got to go run a lap on the track. They want you to run a mile. But he was out of shape. He's back there. He was the last guy in the pack. But a new kid had also come to school that he met, sign of the same shape. And he went up in at the back of the pack. And his name was Jerry Greenfield. And so the two of them were out there running laps and laps, and they became best friends because you're at the back of the pack. They were best friends through junior high and senior high. They graduated. They both went off to college, but a different college. Ben Cohen went off to college. He didn't really like it a lot after 2 years, and he dropped out and bought himself an ice cream truck and started selling ice cream. He did that a couple of years, and then he sold the truck. And he then went to the Adirondack Mountains and joined a program of teaching kids who had gotten into trouble, and he taught them how to do pottery. And at the same time, on the side, he began experimenting making ice cream. Jerry, on the other hand, went to college, and he did well. And his passion was to go to medical school. And so after college, he applied to medical school, and he was rejected. And so he applied a second time, and he was rejected a second time. So he didn't really know what to be doing with his life when his friend Ben called and said, hey, why don't you come join me? And what if we started making our own ice cream and we opened up an ice cream shop? So Jerry went and joined Ben there in Vermont. They found themselves a little gas station that they could buy and renovate it into an ice cream shop. They started making their own ice cream. They were there to serve it, and they had a ball. It was so much fun, but it was also so good. And the company began to explode. And I mean, it did so well. And within a couple of years, it occurred to Ben, we're not making ice cream anymore. We're not scooping ice cream anymore. We're businessmen. We're running a business. And he said, you know, our business needs to have a soul. It can't just be about making money. It's got to be about blessing life. And so they started looking, how can we invest in the community where we are so that we can help to be blessing life while we produce great ice cream? So what they discovered was, for instance, there was like a religious organization that was working with homeless people and trying to teach them how to become bakers. And so they went to them and said, how about if we give you the contract to make brownies for our ice cream? And so it helped and it helped. And they just started looking for all kinds of opportunities like that to invest back in the community. And when they put out their end of the year report, they would have one column on a page that listed all the numbers and would show their profit, and another column on that page that listed all the things they had directly done in the community to bless life. Do not look only to your own needs, but look to the needs of others. And so I found myself standing there looking at that ice cream. And I knew I could look to my own need and I could bless life. But then I also knew several years ago they sold the company. And I couldn't guarantee that the new company was still living by the same values that they had. But as I stood there looking at the Ben and Jerry ice cream, I also remembered a sign they had put up in their office to help them stay grounded in their values. It was a sign that simply said, "When you were born, you cried, and the world rejoiced. Now, go live your life in such a way that when you die, the world will cry and you will rejoice." It's in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Let each of us lift up our own silent prayer.